My sister found that Dunder Mifflin hoodie that I used to wear in high school.
Oh yeah,
she had it in her closet. She's like, "Do you want this back?" And I was like, "Yes, I will take that back." So the good news, the good news is, I now know what I'll be wearing to your wedding.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and chief financial officer, Sean Roney.
I'm Edwin Janes, regional manager.
And with us as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Bros before hoes. Why? Because your bros are always there for you. They have got your back after your hoe rips your heart out for no good reason. And you were nothing but great to your hoe. And you told her that she was the only hoe for you. And that she was better than all the other hoes in the world. And then... then suddenly she's not your hoe no mo.
Sorry, that was...
that's a great one. That's a great one. I love it.
I liked it. Every week we discuss a topic about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week, season two. We're going to just talk about the season as a whole, some of our favorite episodes. Season 2 aired from September 2005 to May 2006. It was the first full 22-episode season of The Office. Of course, season 1 was only 6 episodes. It kind of... we see a break from the original BBC Office, which the American version is based on. Starts to shift more towards a... American sense of humor. The storylines are new. Where there's a lot of repeats in season one from the BBC's version. And it's kind of just a more colorful show. Steve Carell looks a little better in season two. I think he started working out maybe. This is one of my... I mean, this is definitely... I look at season two as peak... Office sometimes. I know we had our episode about peak Office, but looking back at season two, the Jim and Pam, will they, won't they? Michael being making a jackass of himself constantly. It's a great season.
Yeah, I think when we were coming up to talk about this season, I think part of the reason I wanted to discuss this was because I'm guilty of this, I think most of us, but I tend to push us towards the later seasons
right.
when it comes to discussion topics, in part because there's a lot of plot in those later seasons, 6, yeah. 7, 8, 9. And then also there are a lot of kind of character resolution-y moments, right? Like you get the characters kind of summing things up, the resolution of the relationship between Jim and Pam, Dwight and Angela, Michael leaving, mm-hmm. then coming back for the finale, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But in season two, right, we get The Office really coming into its own, really becoming a very popular show here in the U.S. Like you said, the tone changes, the colors get brighter, Michael Scott loses weight, and it just feels like it's finally found its voice, its footing. It's 22 episodes versus the 6 episode for a season, and I think just in general, the show kind of becomes itself. So I wanted to take, we're going to take some time to go through the characters, the moments, the relationships that make up the season.
I think, of course, this is the season of Jim and Pam. Right? Mm-hmm. Should we just start there?
Yeah.
I mean, Pam is dating Roy, who it has been introduced as a galoot.
I think it's
not a good word for Roy.
He's basically Donkey Kong. No, he's a warehouse worker.
Right.
He's a laborer.
he's blue collar.
Yeah. But Michael doesn't see it. Michael doesn't see that because he is colorblind.
I mean, you know, Roy doesn't treat Pam very well.
Right. We see as Roy and Pam are on screen together that their relationship isn't perfect. You do see moments, right, over the course of the early seasons where they do have kind of nice moments, and then it cuts to Jim feeling really awkward in the back.
Yeah.
But you also see them get into arguments. You see them, you know, just kind of show that they're not maybe perfect for each other, even though they're together at the moment.
Valentine's Day, episode 16 of season 2. Pam spends the whole day watching Phyllis get gifts from Bob Vance. When Roy comes in and she's pissed at him, he's like, oh, don't worry. When we get home, I'm going to give you the best sex of your life. It's like, yeah, particularly.
It's yeah.
Yeah, Roy. And I wouldn't say like Roy's mean to Pam. He just takes her for granted.
He's oblivious.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. Really is like has no like they've been engaged. He just is like, I'll just do what I want, and it's
yeah.
It's no point.
He complains about having to listen to Pam talk.
Right. Yeah. To Jim.
Yeah. He's glad that Jim is her friend at work, so that she has someone to talk to, because mm-hmm. he doesn't want to hear it. Mm-hmm.
The narrative arc of Jim and Pam, like it just completely launches the show and the momentum of that. Not that, I mean, that sort of gets resolved within the next couple seasons, but the momentum of that kind of hook that kind of brought the whole audience, really projected the show, gave it momentum for really the rest of its run, I feel like, in terms of an audience building.
I think, too, I mean, too, like you said, this is kind of the season for Jim and Pam. And I think because the other, I mean, something else we haven't talked about, but I'm sure we will, is that the secondary characters, the ensemble characters, get development and screen time and lines in this season as the season goes on. So characters like Phyllis and Oscar and Kevin, they get more and more development and they become more and more part of the
ensemble,
show.
Yeah.
Right. But as that is happening, you get a lot of focus on Michael, Dwight, Jim, Pam, and to a lesser extent, Ryan. But Jim and Pam in particular, I mean, the way that their sort of relationship, even though they're not together, is kind of handled, I think, is really well. It's paced in a very nice way that kind of lives within the sort of mundane sort of doldrums of the office, where they share these small moments together, right? Kind of bonding and having really endearing, like, connected moments, even though they're not, you know, in a relationship with each other. I think just in general, like, it's really... it's like it's very endearing. It's very heartbreaking. It's very sweet. Like, those are the moments, I think, that make up what Jim and Pam kind of are supposed to be.
I think what like hooks you into the show a little bit is this that the characters could have better lives, that they almost want better lives, but they've all settled for this, and you watch them continue to do that. And I think that, like, you know, just that Jim is actually a very smart, charming guy, and he just is going to work at this paper company just because. Same with Pam settling for reception. And that Jim can't have Pam, and so he just dates Amy Adams.
Katie.
You know,
Katie.
Who he doesn't really connect with, but, you know, he just doesn't seem to care. It's something interesting about watching them in those situations.
Yeah, I think it's very resonant, and I think it's very something that that you can kind of tap into as a viewer, this idea that you're maybe in a job that you're not, you know, really into, or you don't think is going to be the rest of your life. It's very temporary, and you feel like you're destined or qualified or capable of a lot more, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's an episode in the Office Olympics episode where Pam says about Jim,
yes,
that Jim is the best. He's really engaging and funny and smart. And
when he sets
people,
his mind to something.
Right. Like, he can do amazing things, but the problem is the Jim works here. So, like, those moments never really happen,
yeah.
You know? So,
There's some suspense to it. You're just waiting for, when is he gonna tell her that he loves her? You know, when is Pam going to strive for something beyond reception, you know?
And I think, too, the sort of will they, won't they sort of feature is made a little more interesting or a little more complex by the fact that Pam has kind of committed herself to Roy, right? That she's engaged. It's not like in Cheers, right? And Sam, when Sam and Diane are going back and forth, it's just that they're opposites, right? You know, they get into arguments and they hate each other, right? Like, that's the kind of cliche, is these two people like really hate each other. They're at each other's throats all the time,
right?
And then they get together, or it's like, will they, won't they, you know? But with Jim and Pam, it's almost like they're locked out of that because of Pam's engagement, and it's like, how are they going to overcome that, or what's going to happen? Like, they won't continue down this path forever. So that's how they kind of, that's kind of what underpins season two up until Casino Night, where Jim makes his move,
yeah,
and tells Pam that he loves her.
The big finale, a great season finale.
Best finale in the series, right?
Yeah, I would agree.
Like, it's the only cliffhanger you really get in the show.
You're right. It is. I'm just trying to think of the other ones. But
at least
there you go.
Level.
You can't you can't even. But
okay, wait. Let's go through it. The job,
okay.
Right?
Oh, when Ryan looks at the camera.
Yeah, when Ryan looks at the camera at the end.
That's a good one.
Right? Goodbye, Toby. When Jim doesn't propose
Goodbye,
to
Toby
Pam.
Is a great episode.
Shoot.
That was drafted in our episode draft.
Yeah, how does season 5 end?
And
what's
so
the last
Casino
episode
Night.
Of season 5?
Holly Lee? No. Holly leaves?
No.
Or is that later?
That's earlier in that season. Hold on. I'm slowing us down so much.
No, this is good. I want to. This is.
Hot Girl is the finale
Company
of season 1.
Picnic.
Oh, Company Picnic. Casino Night's definitely better than
Jim and Pam are pregnant. That's like the big reveal.
That's the big reveal. And Holly and Michael reconnect when they do their history of Dunder Mifflin.
Holly, you and I are soup snakes. Which we, different kind, no wait, soulmates. season 6 ends with Whistleblower, right?
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Season 7 ends with the Search Committee Part 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Season 8 ends with Free Panel Portrait Studio, and then season 9 is the finale.
So they all have, like, it's like all those things in common are like, they have to do with the relationship we really care about, mm-hmm. right? In some way or another. And the season 2 is the first time, it's really the only chance the show gets to use Jim and Pam's, you know, drama as a real hook. I mean, there of course is they're having marital problems later. They're struggling with their move to Philadelphia. All that, there's all that later, but this whole season is, it's like early in a relationship where there's a sort of, you get to do these like dates for the first time that, you know, you maybe you'll do that. You'll go to that restaurant a whole lot in your relationship, but the first time you go, you remember it. And it's, they get all these chances to play with new plot devices just within the office. There's not even the people from Stanford yet. So it's the only time you get kind of the full original cast just on its own, including all the ensemble members. It's just, it's a special season for that reason.
The Jim and Pam story in season 2 starts with episode 1 of season 2, the Dundies. Mm-hmm. When, of course, they go to Chili's. Pam gets super drunk. I think Roy leaves kind of in a fight, right? Is this right?
I think she just leaves.
Yes.
Yeah, she's like, I want to stay and like stuff like that. So he leaves. She's getting hammered and drinking everybody's drinks.
Second drinks.
And polishing off empties.
Second drink. when the ice melts at the end of the drink.
Right.
She gets kicked out of the Chili's, but she does kiss Jim at one point in Chili's after she wins an award. And they just kind of bond more from there. So this gets Jim's hopes up. Quite a bit, I think.
What award does she win?
Whitest tennis shoes. Which Jim looks out for her because he's worried that Michael's going to give her longest engagement again.
He does that in a very clever way where he says, like, I think if you recycle some jokes, it comes across as lazy. And the look on Michael's face when he says that, he's so upset. I don't know if it gives Jim hope, but it's another moment in their, you know, they're
maybe
back and
gives
forth, right?
Us hope.
That's probably
the audience.
I think that's better. That's a more fair way to say it. I think there are a number of sort of moments where they go back and forth, and then, like, I think just to kind of jump forward, I think the other one, at least for me, is in the Christmas party. I think the Christmas party episode is a big, really important episode in this season, not just because of Jim and the teapot and the yearbook picture, right? Actually, to backtrack one, in performance review. Email surveillance, where Jim has his party and Jim and Pam are in Jim's bedroom, and she's like looking at the yearbook picture, and
you're
Jim is
so dorky.
Like, it's a moment that they share together, But in Christmas party, he gives Pam the teapot, which with a bunch of inside jokes built in,
hot sauce packet she thought was ketchup,
a golf pencil he doesn't want to explain,
and
the yearbook photo, and then a letter that he sneaks and puts into his back pocket.
Because the holidays are when you tell people.
Very
how do you feel about that
physically. Very smooth move to get that letter out of there into the back pocket. Yeah. Very smooth
operator that Halpert. But then it comes back at the end of season 9 when he gives her the card from the teapot.
We don't know what's in it.
I think the other interesting thing about that episode is it establishes the Christmas episode as a fixture of every season.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, the Christmas episode is always a moment where something crazy happens, like where people like kind of hang loose, like they get really drunk together.
Which is probably true to life in the office, true office life.
Sure.
Absolutely. And they get drunk together, you know. Is this enough
15 bottles of vodka?
Cool, yeah. Box it up.
Yeah, it should do the trick.
Lampshade on head, right?
It's happening.
Last episode in the conference room, you did the one episode characters.
Yeah.
That checkout guy is a good
that
one.
That checkout guy is a good one.
He just sticks in the mind. I don't know.
He's, yes, he does.
He does a lot with
He's got those
lines.
Sideburns.
It might have my favorite Todd Packer line where Packer comes in and he goes, "What's up, my nerds?"
Season two is the introduction of Todd Packer, too. It's,
yeah.
You know, there is another episode that I think was important to Jim and Pam, which was the fight, episode six.
Oh, yeah.
When they are being very flirtatious on this day. Mm. And then they all go to the dojo at lunch to watch Dwight and Michael fight. And Jim, like, picks up Pam in kind of this weird...
They're flirting.
They're,
kinda,
like, fighting,
yeah.
Sort of. And then Meredith notices, and, like, Pam's shirt gets pulled up and gets really, really awkward and weird about it. And, like...
Oh, my God, put me down.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's kind of a moment where we just realize how fragile their friendship can be, and that Jim could come close to fucking it up sometimes.
Well, and in the performance review, I mean, let's just say this. Every episode has little moments or things that are important to the Jim and Pam relationship, mm-hmm. as we're tracing that over the course of the season, right?
Right.
Just trying to find the big highlights. I think, I'm just thinking about this now, but in the performance review episode, Pam is like really trying to find out about Dwight and Angela, and she asks Phyllis if she's heard anything about office romances. And Phyllis is like, "Oh, you mean like you and Jim?"
Yeah.
And she's like, "Oh my God, I'm sorry, you guys are just so close."
She's like shocked.
And then Pam says to the camera, like, "Just because two people are friends doesn't mean that something's going on." Like, so she becomes kind of aware of how other people might be perceiving kind of their friendship and things like that. So it comes out a lot. I think just kind of trying to trace this through to the end of the season. Booze Cruise.
So many iconic episodes. Yeah, looking through the list. Man.
All of these.
Boys and Girls.
So solid.
It's an album full of bangers.
Drug Testing. Yeah.
But Booze Cruise, you know, Jim realizes that he's, you know, still in love with Pam. He breaks up with Katie, right?
Yeah,
he kind of tells Pam how he feels, right? Where they're on the, like, they're outside together, right? And he kind of can't talk to her, you know? And then, of course, you know, the secret where Jim ends up telling Michael, which basically ends up telling everyone.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Michael starts to dress like Jim, right? And Michael says he is in love with a girl that he works with, right?
Yeah.
And that basically spills the beans.
Yeah.
And then just kind of fast forwarding, right, to casino night, right?
Drug testing when Pam jinxes Jim.
Oh, yes.
And there's a part where she's like, "It looks like you have something you really want to tell me. What is it? What is it?" And he just gives her this.
She says,
those doughy eyes.
Yeah. She says, "You can tell me anything." And his face just falls, you know?
Yeah.
I think.
And she totally, like, picks up on that.
Yeah.
And then goes and buys him the Coke to buy for her.
And I think, too, in the commentary, like, I think, or I remember reading or hearing something where Jenna Fischer talked about that scene and how, like, she said she went and cried after that scene or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Like, it was a very impactful.
It's super
to act
real.
Through.
Like,
yeah.
Like, it's so and I mean the actors at the ages they were. I mean, there is a very much a kind of a teen romance feel. I'm not saying they're teenagers, but like when you're watching season
Puppy
two,
love.
They're so much younger that you still have these kind of romantic games.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That, like, are so visceral, I think, to so many people of, you know, if you've had a crush on someone and you've never been able to do something, it's like we can all relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bit of a side tangent, but I just like recently there's watched a video and it was like they were talking about this, an essay David Foster Wallace wrote about irony. And he talked about TV throughout the 90s of how so many shows, things like Seinfeld and even like South Park, they kind of were devoid of real emotional moments. And it kind of became a lot of eye rolling and a lot of just jokes. And everyone was kind of mean and nothing. There was no sort of real emotional catharsis. Hmm. And then it credits The Office with being this large comeback to sincerity.
It's really interesting.
What we really needed. And this season, and you get in season one, you don't really get those sincere moments nearly as much. But this season, he was not David Foster Wallace, but the guy analyzing his essay was like, The Office is sort of this, let's return to some sincerity. And you get moments throughout this season that are like super touching.
Right,
like,
away, I think about the first episode again, the Dundies, when Michael's being super obnoxious the whole time, totally offensive. Mm-hmm. He does ping the racist.
Hello, everybody.
Character.
I am ping.
I mean, he's just being like
the
super...
Dundees. How can I explain it? I'll take it through my friend.
Yeah. And then those like those there's those jerks at Chili's who like
sing it, Elton.
You suck. You suck, man. And they like throw their drink at him, and you just see like Michael get so defeated so quickly, and the office stands up for him. You know, I mean, I think Pam is starts applauding again or something like that, but that is like, I don't think you felt sorry for him in season one ever, you know? So this is like right off the bat, season one, they're kind of trying to change things up a little bit.
The other big moment that, for me, the first moment in the office that really was like punched me in the heart was the talk that Michael and Jim have on the booze cruise.
Yeah.
It's the first time you see Michael in this kind of, not a father figure, but at least like someone who Jim turns to for advice or gets good advice. Michael gives good advice. It's kind of like, whoa, this show has a little another dimension I never really considered before.
Never, ever give up. And then there's another moment where I don't even remember the context, but it's undercut with Jim and Pam, and I think it's you know, when two people find each other, like what should keep them apart, you know? Like that's like a moment that like where Michael is speaking and kind of delivering like a pearl of wisdom that you don't really expect to come from him, but it's directly about Jim and Pam, you know?
Yeah. It's a show, and this season especially, like there's not really sarcastic humor in The Office. There's not irony, you know. A lot of it does come from putting very fully realized characters in situations together where they react, and it's really funny, and that does go against the grain, I think, of a lot of big shows that came before The Office.
And you know, when you talk about real characters reacting, the ensemble characters reacting and becoming and growing into themselves and having a presence on the show is something that is unique to this season compared to basically every other season, right? You get to see Kevin kind of become himself, and, you know, Oscar and Angela,
Meredith at the Christmas party,
right? And Phyllis, like they all get these moments to kind of shine and steal scenes, and like, I mean, that's Creed. Part of the humor in the early seasons. It's like, wait, what are you saying? Like, is that trash talk from Phyllis, right?
Yeah.
And in the Office Olympics episode, like, there are a lot of really nice moments.
Oh, yeah. Office Olympics is another episode that ends on a really heartwarming note when they're all having the medal ceremony and Michael has bought his condo and is feeling vulnerable, I guess. But... just another really heartwarming moment.
The warehouse too comes into play in season two. A little more. I mean, obviously it's in basketball and in the first season, but
Daryl,
Boys and Girls, is an episode.
Still get Patrice O'Neill in the office in this season.
R.I.P.
Yep,
Patrice O'Neill.
God, it really is. Scrolling through these episodes, just every one.
What's your favorite episode from season two? Can you pick one?
I love conflict resolution.
That's a good one.
I think the last like five is such an amazing run. Where it really is. Take your daughter to work day to casino night. I think it's just like, man, those are back to back to back.
I watched The Injury recently. That is an all-time great.
Yeah.
And I mean, the first Halloween, you know, we lose, what's his name? Darren?
Devin.
Devin. That was like... the Pete Best of the Office cast.
I think for me, rewatching the season and kind of going back to it, this is the season that I really fell in love with The Office as a viewer when it was airing on TV. And this is the season that like I bought the DVDs, you know, and like I watched them heavy rotation. Like I spent a ton of time with the season. And, you know, it's one that I don't go back to as often just because of that fact, right? And I think I've said this on the show, but going back, I think the big difference between this season and the others is that the ones that come after is that you get so many nice, small, quiet moments where characters deliver some of their funniest lines via talking head in a really subtle, not very loud sort of way.
Yeah.
Like one I'm thinking of is Dwight, where he talks about how there's been a high rate of yeast infections. It's probably because we're downriver from that old bread factory, right? Like it's such a small line.
Yeah.
Right? Or, and a lot of
takes
what makes
time when. The delivery of that.
And what makes up a lot of these episodes is you have plot scenes, but then it's intercut with just small moments that are funny, right? Mm-hmm. Like at Jim's party in Performance Review, Ryan is cooking something on the barbecue and Kevin slaps his hand away and he goes, "Not so fast, fire guy.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's a tiny little moment, but like those little things are kind of like the bread and butter of the show.
He said I was dull.
this is a great season for Michael Scott, though. We have to talk about Michael Scott.
Yeah, we've gone a while without talking about Michael.
So, first of all, The Client, where Michael takes, Michael and Jan take Tim Meadows out to Outback Steakhouse. And
Chili's.
Is it?
Chili's. Where baby.
Chili's is where business is done.
Oh, my gosh.
Small Businessman Magazine. They published that? No, I wrote a letter.
Oh, my gosh. How could I forget? This is the season of Chili's.
That's right.
Because, of course, Michael gives Devin a Chili's gift certificate as well, a coupon, when he fires him. But at the end of that episode, Michael and Jan smooch in the parking lot.
All right, we're going to go into the go-go.
They don't actually sleep together. They just spend the night talking and crying.
That's right. This is the beginning not only of Michael and Jan, but the beginning of there being some sort of unrest or instability, lack of stability in the corporate level above Michael.
Yeah.
Like, we start to see a little bit of, eventually it becomes dysfunction as Jan kind of, you know, goes down her thing and eventually gets fired. But like, this is the first we see of that. You know?
Right. In season one, it's very much like corporate is all these people who have their shit together just trying to get Michael to behave.
It's less of corporate / Jan applying pressure to Michael than it is in season two.
Poor Jan, honestly.
Have I slept with a woman? More than one?
Less than three.
That is not current.
It's kind of funny, James.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because they have, you know, like we said, the Jim and Pam is the thrust of this season. But like, then they also introduce the Angela and Dwight relationship, and Jan and Michael, and these sort of alternate versions of Jim and Pam that are much more dysfunctional and in some cases, and they both have to be secret. Those
you
other
mean
two
Dwight
relationships,
and
yeah,
yeah,
and like they keep that secret. Michael and Jan have to kind of keep theirs secret.
Everyone seems to figure it out though in performance review, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Another great Michael moment.
Michael and Jan, yes.
Yep.
Email surveillance is when we learn that Michael is in an improv group.
Right.
We get to see Michael go to improv class, which is an all-time great moment.
There's a lot of Steve Carell's like physical comedy prowess is really established in this season.
Gosh.
When he dances on the booze cruise, I mean,
yeah,
incredible moment. All his stuff in the improv.
Like, it's kind of a throwback to the British Office one where Ricky Gervais dances, but like Michael Scott makes it his own. He's like, dancing is how we speak with our bodies. What am I saying?
Yeah. I mean, in The Injury, there's some great physical comedy, just the way that he like can't ever open a door with his crutches. Mm-hmm. And like,
I love the scene where in The Injury where Michael is in the bathroom and Toby and Ryan are standing outside and we just hear like the splashing and crashing noises. Mm-hmm. And the groans that Steve Carell makes. He's like, Ryan,
send Ryan.
He has to clean me up.
Ryan is dead.
Because BJ Novak makes the throat across his finger.
Ryan, who's supposed to be dead.
Ryan is dead. No, he's not. Speaking of Ryan, you bring him up too.
Yeah,
he has
there
a
you
much
go.
Different role in season two than he does in any other season. For
Fire
sure.
guy.
Yeah, and he's still kind of just a normal guy in season two.
He's a temp. He's not really wanting to be there. Like you don't really get the sense of who he is outside of the fact that Michael treats him like a servant and is like weirdly like infatuated or loves hanging out with Ryan. Cool guy.
He's
young.
Wins hottest in the office. And he gets like the utility of Ryan in season one, which is like, we need a new guy to tour through the office, essentially. That's not there in season two anymore. And he's there and he's still like in the opening credits. Like he is for the whole time, but
yeah.
We also see his relationship with Kelly start to develop.
Valentine's Day.
And that starts when it's like they hook up. And then he's just like, I don't want to do that.
I hooked up with Kelly the day before Valentine's Day.
He says with his hands in his hair.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Walk away, bitch.
I think in general, like this season is a lot of Michael driving the action, right? Mm-hmm. This, like a lot of the early episodes of The Office, you can describe as this is X day in the office and Michael is doing this, right? Mm-hmm. So it's Halloween and Michael has to fire someone, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's Christmas and Michael is leading the White Elephant group. Like,
it's take your daughter to work day and Michael is uncomfortable
around children.
With the children.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny the way that how much he drives the action in this episode and like or in this season. Or like in his birthday, right? We just get to see how insecure and needy Michael is. And it gets explored in so many different ways. Like in Michael's birthday where he rents the hockey rink and Dwight lives in the jersey, but Kevin is waiting to find out if he has skin cancer.
Right. Like,
and
you get to see Steve Carell's talent as a skater is very evident.
That's right.
Incredible skater.
He's a beautiful skater.
He's like, why have I spent all this time? This is later in the show, but he's like, why have I spent so much time at Dunder Mifflin? I don't know. Because I could have, it's not the money, because I could have made much more as a doctor, a professional athlete.
Also, season two is, I think, the best, at least for me, I think, is the best Kevin. The subtle, kind of more quiet, reserved Kevin,
who is like actually maybe a cool guy,
yeah, who's just a little muted, who's like just he plays in the, he's quiet,
he's got
guy,
a band, he plays poker.
Right, he wears that fedora.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I noticed they zoom in on his like bracelet when in Casino Night as he's talking about winning, like yeah, he's wearing some jewelry and stuff.
So you get a bracelet when you win a World Series of Poker
event. Oh, okay,
that's why,
whatever.
Because he talks about how he won a World Series of Poker event, right? Or like when Kevin gets the foot bath.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Maybe I should have taken the iPod.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, little things like that where Kevin is less of a, you know, full-on
a cartoon character.
Yeah, kind of. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is more more subtle or more comes in the
creeping
background.
Creeping that direction.
Right.
Great little Phyllis moments. She's, again, they're just sort of easing their way into the show. And so you get the little moments they have are great.
In a way where they all feel real.
Exactly.
Know? Yeah.
Everyone on the Titanic drowned.
We learn that Oscar is gay, but he hasn't come out yet. Via the secret episode where Dwight is investigating, right?
I love, oh my gosh, that's a great Michael and Dwight moment too, when Dwight is telling Oscar about this. And like, Michael shuts down Dwight so often, but this is one of those few times where they hang up with Oscar and he's like, and Dwight's like, do you believe him? He's like, no, I want you to make this a priority. Investigate this.
I think the drug testing episode is worth talking about a little more in detail.
And you know, we didn't even mention in our Dwight episode too, just like that part where Dwight has to decide between Michael and his morals and pees in the cup for him.
carries
it through the office in a coffee cup.
Because Michael went to an Alicia Keys concert.
Dwight
Michael a funny cigarette. Yeah.
Michael opens the door like a crack and then shuts it in Dwight's face. Oh my gosh.
It hits
so
Dwight
sad.
Hard. It hits Dwight. He really
turns in his badge.
Yeah. It really does. That's how scene two, when you sort of get the revolving door, every character, let's have every character interact with Dwight. Again, like you just don't get a ton of moments like that in the rest of the seasons. You can really only get away with that in season two. You get to know Creed. He gives you...
That is Northern Lights Cannabis Indica.
No.
It's marijuana.
That is, it's just great writing. It's so good.
So good.
Yeah. That I think like that episode jumps to mind. That's at probably top two or three for me, I would say, from this season. It's kind of funny now, how destigmatized weed has become since that episode aired.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know how it'll continue to age, but it's still fantastic.
That they find a joint in the parking lot, so the company sends a drug testing company to the office to drug test everyone that day. Is so outrageous.
Well, I think it's the day before or something like that. Or it's like... Dwight calls it in or something, and it's like corporate policy.
Oh,
that
right.
They'll randomly screen or something like that if they feel like they have. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
it always felt to me more like Dwight invoking a rule from the rule book,
right?
That is like rarely enforced.
Well, there's
know?
That other part. Maybe this isn't even in this season, but when Dwight and Michael plant Caprese salad in Toby's desk.
Oh, yeah. And frame Toby.
And they're able to, like, call the cops to, like, come in and search the desk for, like, a little baggie of weed. It just... they're very sensitive about marijuana in Pennsylvania, Scranton, Pennsylvania.
When you look down the list of these episodes, just speaking of drug testing, you can almost see like the writers coming up with a list of like, all right, what could happen in a typical workplace? And they just came up with like, okay, maybe there's a day they have to do random drug screenings. What could happen there? Mm-hmm. They do they have Halloween, they have Christmas, these Valentine's Day, take your daughter to work day. They sort of just these list. What if we had a real personnel problem?
What if someone poops on Michael's carpet?
Yeah, it's just these lists of like, what are these little sandboxes we could play with that or would be in an office? You know,
we haven't really mentioned the episode The Carpet, which I think also has another moment where Michael invites tells Ed Truck that there's some problem with his severance pay or something like, or his retirement mm-hmm. money or something like that, to get him to come out to the office. And then, you know, tells him about what happened. Someone pooped on his carpet. And Ed Truck says something to him to the effect of like, you know, why can't your workers be your workers and your family be your family?
Mm-hmm.
And like, that really affects Michael too, you know, that, maybe, you know, but then of course we learn in the end that his best friend Todd Packer was the one who did it,
mm-hmm.
and all that.
We get the introduction of Todd Packer as like this really weird kind of playing to Michael's worst influences. Michael feels like the Dwight to Packer's, you know, version of Michael Scott.
Yeah,
right?
That's and very
like,
true.
And Packer only comes back kind of later in the show. Like they don't really utilize him all that often, but he's like a. You know, he's just this weird, destructive, obnoxious force.
He pops in enough. Yeah, his introduction is, I think, in Sexual Harassment. I think that's the first time we see him. He's on the phone.
No, he calls in the pilot.
In I the think. Pilot, he yeah. calls, and it's not that actor who I can't.
Oh, it's not David Koechner.
No, but
is that the Michael Snot? When does he say that?
Where's Michael Snot sniffing some dude's thong? Probably.
You know what? Another thing I like is in Office Olympics, heavy hitting episode.
Yeah.
But the process of Michael buying a condo,
yeah,
is a really nice device to kind of see the other side of Michael's life of how little he has.
He's trying to be an adult,
and it really sets up his need to be a part of this family that he calls, that he considers a family. Like, yeah. it's really important that you see that, like. The lonely process of buying the condo.
He doesn't have anything. Right. He doesn't have much outside of the office and his improv class.
I think, too, you know, in these episodes, we see a lot of what are the office tropes, which is like Michael, you know, coming up with something that everyone has to kind of live with, a cold open, you know, where you know, Jim is pranking Dwight. Like, just in general... This is like a very pure version of The Office, right?
Yes.
In later seasons, you know, like the cold opens are almost like they almost have to reference the fact that like they've done these cold opens so often, right?
Mm.
Or you see the opening credits where somebody else is manager and they turn the little thing differently or they use different shots of the actors and stuff. Like mm-hmm. this is like The Office at it's almost its purest form, right?
Right.
Where it's just people working in an office and there's a lot of funny, weird things that happen.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Everybody's there for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
The core people. I mean, season 3, you could almost say too, but like, but things are messed up because we've got Jim at Stanford and new people in the office and things like that.
So that's a great point you mentioned, right? I mean, we talk about this office being like, or this office, this season of The Office being, you know, this is where it becomes really popular. I think one thing we should mention is Steve Carell was in The 40-Year-Old Virgin the summer.
Okay, yeah.
Seasons 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. So like, I mean, I think even reading about the ratings, like the premiere did almost twice as well. The season premiere of season 2 of The Dundies when it aired did almost twice as well as Hot Girl when the last episode of season 1.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, so thinking about how this season is very, like we love this season. There's a lot of great moments, Jim and Pam, right? Like let's talk about how in season 3, starting in season 3, the world starts to expand. More characters come in. Andy Bernard, Karen Filippelli, right? We see more David Wallace. Like as the show begins to expand and grow and all these characters, like when I think about favorite seasons and favorite moments, right? it's like, man, but they don't have, you know, Aaron or Gabe or Andy like in these earlier seasons. So you think this season two is better for worse for not having more characters or for staying in The Office?
I don't know, while those characters are so funny and I love them, like, I mean, this season two shows you don't need all that. Like, you don't need a bunch of extra characters. You don't need another branch or maybe they go to the corporate office in this.
Michael goes to New York.
Yeah, he does. Okay. So
Conan O'Brien walks by while he's talking to the fake Tina Fey.
Of course he does. Yeah, that's right.
Is the city so nice? They named it twice. Manhattan is the other name.
Sorry. It's like, I've been let's just say that my trivia has been getting stomped on this whole episode. No.
Well, look, I
got a New York pizza, my favorite New York pizza joint, and I'm going to get me a New York slice. Sbarro.
We are getting close to our time here. So do you have any concluding statements about season 2?
I have a couple questions for you guys.
Oh, questions. Okay, fine.
You mentioned cold opens and I found this, I was like starting to think about that more. It's fascinating. So I didn't realize there's no cold opens in season 1 and the first two episodes of season 2.
Yeah.
What's the first cold open in The Office?
Gosh, I don't know off the top of my head.
It's from Office Olympics.
Jeans?
No, Michael has Ryan get him a breakfast sandwich.
Oh, I was going to say, that's
has
a moment.
Him come in at like
I
six.
Love that moment.
Mm-hmm. Take your pants off, run around.
He's like,
I'm going to go nap in my car.
Creepy. He's like, I'm a bit of an early bird and I'm also a night owl.
Yeah.
Which means I am wise. And I have worms.
A lot of these cold opens have to do with
he takes off the bun. He goes, healthier, less carbs.
Yeah. A lot of the cold opens have to do with setting up the plot for the rest of the episode as well.
Yeah.
And the first Jim Dwight prank, at least that happens in a cold open. Do you remember which one?
Is it the desk?
The desk in the bathroom.
Yeah. Mm.
Which was a massive project, the way, getting that whole desk with a working phone.
Who helped him with that?
There's a lot.
Somebody
of,
must have.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Then he pops the yoga ball, which isn't really a prank. He puts his stuff in the vending machine, and
he gift wraps the desk. Right? Is that the
That's season three, I believe. Okay. And then the only other one he does is convincing Dwight he can move things with his mind.
In cold.
Oh yeah.
In terms of cold.
In the cold opens. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then sorry, my last one. This is my. Just a fantastic cold open is when Jim keeps looking up at reception at where Pam and he keeps looking at Ryan and he's like, Ryan's like, that's weird, but it's not the way Michael looks at me. It's just the way it pans over to Michael.
And then he's like,
staring at him through. He's got one finger pulling down the blinds, staring at him through the blinds.
Catches the camera looking at him. It's really.
Oh my gosh.
It's just good stuff. Good stuff.
I think just, okay, to wrap up season two, and kind of going back to my other question is like, I think the show is at its best when it can feature all these characters, but I think the focus that you get from season two is really important and really allows it to kind of, you know, be the kind of a purest version of The Office, if not maybe like the perfect version. I'm not saying it is or isn't, but like it definitely feels like The Office is the most itself in season two, right?
Yeah,
and
agree.
I mean, for me personally, like this is one of the like seasons that is closest to me. Like I've
spent
so much time with the season. Like there are moments that like I really love. And going back to rewatch it and finding, I think the idea that you can go back to The Office, even having seen it so many times, and finding small moments or little things or visual sight gags that like you maybe didn't notice before that you'd forgotten about is like the joy of watching the show.
Yeah,
totally.
Like that's why I rewatched the show, to find small things that I'd forgotten. You know, I think, and going back to rewatch season two gave me a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe it's time for our conference room.
All right, you know what? That's it. Conference room, 5 minutes.
All right, so for this one, this is going to be real quick. I just cut together what I consider some of my favorite bloopers from season two.
Okay,
ones I wish they had just kept in the show as is, because it's so good. So there's just 2 minutes. I'm just going to play it.
Okay.
Audio conference room.
All right.
pulling out the TV in the conference room here.
Where is the clitoris? If someone says next to the vagina, does that mean
so much time
on the leg?
So see, I will end up having your little butt in jail, and what they will do to you is nothing compared to what I'll do to you before you get down there. You are not to be running.
He said I was dull. I'm not.
I'm going to have kids, and I'm going to get married, not necessarily in that order.
What if
and
she's
And they're
55?
Going to live here. What?
What if she's 50?
I love you. I love you, Michael.
I love you, too. What are you even talking about?
I was just talking about... I farted.
Are you kidding me?
I did.
Oh, my God! This is my place! Okay, let's go back to one.
Everybody's having fun, having a good time. The brainiacs and the dorks and the athletes and the sluts and the... I'm sorry.
I remember every hot summer morning, Dad driving us all over to Rocky Glen swimming hole near Factoryville. We would splash away until 10 a.m. and then work the beet fields till well after midnight.
That's no hard to laugh. It's gotta be John Krasinski. Who's tackling that?
My uncle told me it looked like a sausage casing.
I can't work with this.
That's it.
Oh, that's great.
That was a great conference room.
Just for fun. All right, let's wrap this thing up.
Let's do some trivia.
Let's wrap it up.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
Woo! All right, well, I mentioned a little bit before, but this is... I brought some hard questions to this one.
Good.
This is from Season 2, Episode 16.
Oh, man, off the top of my head, the... Secret?
It's the carpet.
You said it. You actually said what episode 16 during this episode.
I have it handy. It's Christmas party?
No.
It's Valentine's Day.
It's Valentine's Day.
Oh. I looked.
Number? I was looking at number overall.
Yeah. This is from Valentine's Day.
Well, we look great.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go in order of the episode here. Boy. These are tough. All right, what magazine, it's a fake magazine, but what magazine is Kelly reading when she's talking to Jim and recapping her date with Ryan?
What's the name of the fictional magazine?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, no idea.
I don't know.
Self.
I don't know. Is that really a fictional magazine?
I don't know. I
think it's a real magazine.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was like a fake Play on Us magazine or something.
I don't know.
Anyway, I just like that Kelly would be reading that.
Mm-hmm. And then I said, Ryan.
It's a real magazine.
Is it real? Oh, my God. I didn't know. Okay. Yeah. Who does Michael think the founder of the Rockefeller Center is?
Oh, man.
He points out the skating rink. He goes, I think the Rangers practice here.
The Rangers practice here. 30 Rockefeller Center. Norman Rockefeller? Norman Rockwell? I don't know.
Good guess. No, Theodore Rockefeller. Oh. He thinks it's Theodore Roosevelt.
Theodore Roosevelt. God,
it says Theodore Rockefeller.
Yeah.
I never caught that.
Michael refers to New York as Scranton on what three different things?
Steroids?
Yes.
Speed?
Yes.
Crack? I don't know.
Acid. And it goes in the reverse order. It goes, it's like Scranton on acid. No, speed.
Oh, yeah.
No, steroids. all right, this is of course when Michael goes and meets we meet David Wallace for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Valentine's
Day.
He's the new CFO. Jan's very stressed out. They've hooked up. Michael spills the beans when he's talking to three regional managers.
Craig, Josh, and
Alan.
Nope. Buffalo.
Craig and Josh are correct.
Josh Porter in Stanford. Craigers. Albany. We never know Craig's last name.
Is it Bruce?
I can see the other guy. I just don't know his name.
It's Dan Gordon in Buffalo.
No, I never would have
Dan Gordon in Buffalo.
I think it's Dan Gore. Is it not?
I thought it was Gordon.
The only reason I say that is because Dan Gore was like a writer. He wrote on Parks. He created Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh.
Like, now that you say that, like, I remember hearing that and thinking that. I could be wrong, but...
Yeah. Well, now I gotta know. Hang on. It is... Oh, it is Dan Gore.
Dan
You're right.
Gore. G-O-R. Ooh, yeah.
Sure, they said Gordon. Yeah. Wow. This is listeners, this is how good Edwin is at trivia. Yeah. He just corrected my
holy
question.
Moly. As a similar thing, if you notice, one of the producers that's listed in the opening credits in a lot of the episodes of The Office is Randy Cordray.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So that plays into Danny Cordray in season 7.
Oh, okay.
Who receives Valentine's Day gifts in this episode?
Phyllis.
Yes.
Oscar.
So, yes.
Angela.
I wonder if the Oscar, because he gets flowers, like, who's it from?
This is my mom.
He says his mom.
It's from Gil.
From Gil.
It's yeah. definitely from Gil.
Yeah.
I wonder if he knows.
Yeah.
That's what Oscar said.
Yeah.
You said Phyllis, Oscar, Angela.
Dwight.
And Dwight, of course, gets the bobblehead, the iconic bobblehead, which apparently they made NBC made an initial order of like 5,000 of those to sell, and they just sold out.
Oh, my God.
I can imagine,
for sure.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. The other one I'm not sure about is Stanley. We see Stanley eating a heart thing of chocolates. But it might have been something Bob Vance gave to Phyllis that he was eating.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay.
Not clear on that one. If we see, we see at the end, we see a mug on David Wallace's desk. What does it say?
Oh, my gosh. World's best boss.
Yes,
world's
best. It does.
What?
It
awesome.
Does. It's a little like he's got his own world's best
slightly
boss.
Slightly different.
But it's a black mug with white text as opposed to Michael's.
He got it at Hot Topic instead of Spencer Gifts.
Yeah.
I love the little like things that they drop that like corporate is just kind of like a
similar
like,
version.
Similar version of Scranton. Like,
yeah.
Like David Wallace, it's such a throwaway line, but he's like, oh man, to Jim, like, oh, you're going to love working here. For this one guy, Kendall.
In HR.
Ugh.
And then when Jim is sitting in the lobby, he hears Dunder Mifflin. This is Grace. Like,
yeah,
it's a different.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, this. If you get this, I'm done. What's the name of the flower service that Bob uses to send flowers to Phyllis? It is briefly frame scene on the delivery man's jacket.
Jeez. No clue.
It is William Edwards Flowers.
I would never have guessed.
Tuck that one away if you ever want to stump anyone.
Okay.
That is
William Edwards.
I had to pause a lot because it was too blurry. but I finally figured it out. I got the first word from his hat in the first scene and the rest on his jacket later. That's
working hard for the
that's
trivia.
Impossible. Yeah. Those are all my questions. However, given that it is Easter time when this episode's coming out, roughly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I have three Easter eggs that I found out from this episode. It's a Valentine's Day, so with the romance theme, during all of Jim's talking heads in this episode, Pam walks by in the background delivering Phyllis gifts. You always see Pam.
Interesting.
Oh,
wow.
Jim. And in all of Pam's talking heads, Jim is sitting in the background talking to someone else.
Hmm.
So you always get them.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice fun Easter egg. Yeah.
The second one, the person who Michael thinks is Tina Fey, the Tina Fey lookalike, funny enough, appears in season 2 of 30 Rock in the episode Sandwich Day.
Wow.
As the check-in lady.
Wow.
So she actually was in 30 Rock.
That is a fun fact.
That's a mouthy sandwich girl.
Now this last one, I noticed this, given this frame-by-frame trivia, that's how I'm watching it. I noticed this, and I only found one other, someone posted on Reddit, also noticing this, and you might want to bring this up, Sean. Okay, at the 6 minute 38 timestamp, I am almost positive
which episode
in Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay.
In this, this is all from this episode. We see Lin-Manuel Miranda, pre-fame, very young, is in the background of the shot, and I don't think he's credited or anything because he wasn't. No one knew who he was in 2006.
Shoot.
I don't know if you're being able to pull it up, but
yeah.
Let me give you that homework. Again, the timestamp is at 6 minutes, 38 seconds. Michael's just walking down the street. If it isn't Lin-Manuel Miranda, it is an insane coincidence that someone who would be in that area. And it makes sense that Lin-Manuel would be, he was doing In the Heights at the time.
Right.
He would have been in the area. It would have made sense.
Wow, you're right. You're not the only person who's noticed this.
Yeah, because immediately I was like, was this on purpose? And everyone agrees it looks exactly like them, but people don't.
But I can't
people
find
like, I can't.
the screen grab. Do you have
it? Wow, I can see it. Yeah, I have it pulled up. Yeah, this guy right here?
Yeah. Here, Sean, come around and look at this.
It looks a lot like him.
Here, oh, my God. Yeah, I see it. Damn.
Like,
that does look like him.
He would have been in New York. I don't know. It feels like if they were just shooting Mike, if they were shooting Steve Carell walking around, is it crazy that he's in this?
It's not him.
You don't think so?
I don't know. If it looks like him for sure.
It looks like him for sure, but it's not.
Dunder Mifflin Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Hey, nice one. All right. Well, listeners, again, Valentine's Day. Look for yourself
and you tell us. You can tell us on our social media. We're on Facebook. Nice. We're on Twitter at Michael Scott Pod. We're on Instagram at Michael Scott Podcast Company. And we have a phone number that you can call and you can leave us a message. Sometimes we play it on the show. That's 503-694-9314. Give us a call. Check in next week when we have another show where we discuss some aspect of our favorite show, NBC's The Office. And thank you for listening.
All right. Hey. That's just the way we talk in the clink.
We'll see you next week.
Oy vey. Schmier.
That's a little... It was always burning since the world's been turning. Ryan started the fire. It was always burning since
everybody was turning.
Ryan, Megan, Melisandre, Ryan, Rollins, Ronald, now Marilyn Monroe. Ryan started the fire.
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.